What's up? It's Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Under the Hood podcast presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So glad that you are with me here on this Thursday night. Still to come on the show, we'll hear from Sal Palantonio, who covers the NFL like a blanket for ESPN. He's got his thoughts on some of the storylines around the NFL. Also, we'll have Tales from the Hood. Big story that we got to get to for Tales from the Hood that you're really going to like. But at 8 o'clock every night at this time, we give you something football. You know why? Because it's the summer of football.
The summer of football.
All you can ask for is another opportunity to play this game. It burns in me.
On ESPN 1000.
We don't know how many we got. I don't know how many I got. Make it count, boys.
Mahomes flushed out again. Turning the corner. Fires downfield. Caught. Touchdown. Only Mahomes.
You throw to score. You run to win.
Here's Saquon Barkley.
The summer of football at 8.
Here's a quick throw to Miller. Good throw. Touchdown. Fake to Armstrong. Run. Book 5. Book up to the end zone. Touchdown. In book.
Burrow's got time. Launching for the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown. Terrence Marshall.
The summer of football with Jonathan Hood.
Yeah. That's my dog.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Indeed, it is the summer of football right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Every night we give you something football, something NFL, something college, something fantasy. Tonight we talk to the great Dan Jiggetts, former Chicago Bear, is with us here on ESPN 1000 as the NFL season scheduled to be right around the corner. Dan, as always, I appreciate your time.
Hey, it's always good to talk to you, Jonathan. I thought we were going to talk a little music when I heard the Layla with the slow hand.
I know.
I love listening to a little Eric Clapton.
Nothing wrong with that from time to time, right? Especially on a summer night. I want to find out how you're feeling, man. How's everything going with you?
I'm going. Yeah, it's doing good. You know, obviously, this whole situation with being quarantined set back my workouts and everything a little bit. But I got back to it. I started this week. Back again with my guys at GH Fit Lab, and so they got me squared away and got me back on the beam. But it's made such a difference in my life, Jonathan. You know, I thought I was falling apart. You know, double hip replacements and all kinds of great things, and these guys have got me back to the point where I can actually stand up and walk around again. So it's all good.
So it's you and who else is part of that?
Oh, there's like 15 guys, former players and coaches that Greg Heif is working with. Keith Van Horn is usually in there with me, and Otis Wilson's a part of it, and Mark Dennis is a local guy that actually plays for the Dolphins. He's there. Schaefer Suggs, a bunch of different guys are coming in and really taking advantage of this opportunity, because when you retire, and especially as the years go on, the injuries that you collected over the course of a career start to really get to you, and you get over 50 or 55, that's when you really start feeling it. So that was at the point that I was at. So fortunately enough, these guys came along and gave me an opportunity. Keith was the guy that turned me on to them. And boy, it's just been great since then,
That's great. That's great to hear. Dan Jiggetts with us here on the Summer of Football with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I always like to get your perspective as a player's rep, because I would just wonder what a younger Dan Jiggetts would say now in 2020 when you have the season that's supposed to happen, but of course with COVID-19, there's so many question marks, Dan. Mm-hmm. So, if you're a player rep, aren't you going to the league and asking, so what's your plan? Because I haven't seen, there's a bubble in the NBA and in WNBA that, baseball's trying to come back. But for the NFL, right now we should be talking about training camps, and we don't have them for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the first thing that if we talk about the game plans and what they got in store, I would think the first and foremost is how are you going to make sure that people are protected? And when you're talking about football, you're talking about 70-some guys, maybe 80-some guys coming into a training camp situation. That's a whole lot of variables. And how do you control where they go, once practice and meetings are over and that kind of thing? Because, let's face it, if you are out and about after all of that, it adds to the complications in terms of, whether or not you're putting yourself in a situation where you can contract the virus. So it's a very tough spot that they're in right now. And I don't know how you can address it, in a reasonable way without, understanding that the locations that where you have players, you have to have at least a situation where, things are getting better instead of worse. Fortunately, here in Illinois, it looks like, we were ratcheting down for a bit. Now, I know we just had a little uptick. But, you want to see the numbers look right before, you bring people into a situation where they could get very sick. And some, there's a huge possibility that somebody might get really, really sick and not come back from it. So you have to think about that. The other thing is that, with fans and how, whether or not they're going to have an opportunity to see the game live, I don't think that that's going to happen, to be honest with you, Jonathan. Football's become a studio game anyway. Yeah. But, for the players, the fans in the stands, that's a huge advantage if, the home team. And you may not have to be able to have that for a while. So those are things they're looking at. For them, fortunately, they make a lot of money in ticket sales, but the most of their money, the majority of their money now still comes from television contracts. So from a financial standpoint, they'll still be, fairly solvent.
Dan Jiggins with me, Jonathan Hood, on the Summer of Football on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. As you've been seeing, Dan, across the sports landscape, there are some players in sports that feel like they're just not going to play. And some of it is for family reasons, some is because of, they are diabetic or they feel like, they've gone through cancer. Whatever it is,
right.
Some players are opting out. And I'm glad that that is an option and there's no peer pressure.
Yeah, because, if you have a pre-existing condition, that makes you susceptible to this disease. I mean, it just makes sense. It doesn't make any difference how much money you're making if you're not there to spend it. So it's, that's not even, if I were in that situation, I wouldn't even be thinking twice about that. You have to think about your health and the welfare of yourself, not only yourself, but your family as well. So that's the most important thing. The tough thing for football players is you don't have the window that a lot of other, sports athletes do. The career on average in the NFL is still about 3.5 to 4 years. Major League Baseball and basketball and hockey and all the rest of them, I'm sure, are longer than that. So that's also got to be a part of the equation as well.
Would you play, Dan?
If I were, if I were 100% healthy, yes. But if, if I had some kind of underlying condition, I wouldn't want to be around it. Not at all.
Here's why I asked the question is because you playing – you're not going, once you're done with practice and once you're done with the game, you're coming home. You're not going to be in a bubble with guys. And so the last thing you want to do is bring that home. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, the other thing is, do you have a family that you have to be concerned about? If you have young kids or whatever. I'm just looking at it from the standpoint, like when I came into the league, obviously, you're a single guy, you walk in and, you're not going home to, three or four kids and all the rest of that. Yeah, that makes a big difference. And that's when I see even the Major League Baseball guys talking about, hey, look, I've got this going on at home with that going on. I have a child that's, going through some kind of an issue. I've got to think about those kinds of things, too. And that makes that's a totally different, equation rather than, just a bachelor going back to his place and chilling out.
right, exactly. I ain't worried about it. I'm good. I'm back
at
the crib.
You have some responsibilities then,
Right. You make a salient point when you talk about fans. It's so funny. I was talking about this last night with college. Mm-hmm. It is just so strange. You ask a college coach his thoughts on COVID-19 and something outside of X's and O's, and it comes across a little clunky, a little odd. But this is a big storyline for both college and pro football. The ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC are holding out. They're going to wait until while the Big 10 and the Pac-12 said we'll just play conference games. And that's a big question for the NFL too. Are you going to let players zigzag across this country with the same schedule with COVID-19 happening? That's again a big question.
Well, how much can you control the environment? You're packing everybody on the plane and going to it. Now people are, back to flying around, not in the numbers, obviously, that they used to. But, you know, if you can control the environment, that's a little bit different than just going and jumping on a commercial flight somewhere, you know, and plopping yourself down amongst 100 some other people from who knows where. So you do have some control over that. But, you know, still in all, you know, the game itself is a game where, you know, they talk about wearing masks. And I suggest everyone wear a mask because this is no joke. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in football, you can't do that, obviously, while you're playing. And, there's, you know, everybody's in everyone else's face. And that's a tough thing, you know. So how do you measure that and try to figure out some way to mitigate any kind of, you know, possible transfer or whatever? So they've got a ton of things that I'm sure that they're weighing all of these issues. But, you know, in the end, too, you know, the players have to make their decisions. And I would suggest to them that they take all, you know, all the different items into account, because, you know, the last thing you want to see is somebody getting really damaged by this stuff. Because the problem, number one, you see what the virus does to you straight off the bat. But, you know, there's still no real indication of what it's going to do long term. And so it's not just about, like, you know, somebody saying that, well, I'm going to get over it like I do the flu. We just don't know at this point, you know, what the ongoing damage could be. So there's a lot to consider, you know, when you're looking at this thing. It's not just, oh, boy, you don't want to play, you know, or, you know, you don't have, you know, the guts to go out and challenge this thing. It's not that simple.
I saw that the helmet company, the Rydell, is trying to come up with a helmet with that is the eye guard and also a mouth guard to make sure that saliva is not being transferred. And I just think that's ridiculous. Like it's like, you know, that you have to touch. It's a physical sport,
right?
And I know everyone's not going to be comfortable. Usually you get that shield when someone's been poking the eye, and that's a protection thing. But people can get claustrophobic in that thing. I don't think that's going to work for all players.
You just roll all that crap anyway. And then to put a, you know, a face mask on it. I mean, a face shield on that, too.
Yeah.
That'd be a little tough. Because I tell you one thing, they have to hope that they play every game when it's cold. Because if you get heated up inside of a helmet, and that thing weighs about, what, 5 pounds? Mm-hmm. And you have to put that on top of that. You got to put a mask on with the, you know, the face guard and the shield and everything else. Man, you better be in great shape when you get to camp.
That's crazy. So you know, even as we wait to find out what the NFL season will be, the storylines are still the same, Dan, when it comes to Trubisky and Foles. I've maintained that Trubisky, you know, we've been through this for years, and you've been through this for years as a player yourself, just the quarterback controversy, who's going to win out in the end. It's Trubisky's job. I think it's Trubisky's job to lose, I believe. Because if Foles starts and Trubisky is the backup, you'll lose Trubisky for the year. I don't think he's ready to be a backup yet.
Well, it's not going to make any difference whether he's ready for it or not. That ball's no longer in his court. When they signed Nick Foles, that was a real indication. It should have been a real indication to Mitch that it better happen early, or it's not going to happen at all for him this season. Because if Foles is the starting quarterback on week one or week two, as I was thinking, it's over. It's done. Because, see, Mitch is kind of in a strange position because he would be too expensive to have as a backup based on, you know, what his numbers would be next year. So this is it. I mean, he's got, you know, training camp, and if it doesn't happen for him then, they're going to have to make their move. And I suppose that it's not only just, you know, whether or not you look good in training camp, that kind of thing, but it's how does Foles look? If he looks like he's the guy that can come in, tap into this thing and make it work, then I think, you know, Mitch has got, you know, a long road ahead of him.
You start Foles, wouldn't you?
You know, at this point, after, you know, what I've watched over the last couple of years, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
yes.
It's that time, you know. And look, yeah, you know, Mitch has some qualities that I really like. But the circumstances are working against him. You know, he's the number two pick overall, and the two quarterbacks of note that would pick behind him have had great seasons, you know, back-to-back. One wins a Super Bowl and is the MVP of the Super Bowl, and the other one, Deshaun Watson, has been playing lights-out football. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the heat is on, and I don't know if he's got the air conditioner.
Allen Robinson was criticized. Well, I won't say criticized because I think that's an overstep. I would say that LaDainian Tomlinson on NFL Network was saying that he believed that Allen Robinson could be better as a wide receiver. Now, I don't disagree with that because I think we all can get better. But I would say to LaDainian Tomlinson that Robinson cannot throw himself passes.
Yeah, he can't throw it and catch it.
Right. So
it's so fun if not physically possible. Although every now and then the quarterback does that because it ricocheted off somebody. But as a general rule, yeah, wide receivers can't throw the ball and catch it. And I think that, you know, in reality, when you look at what Allen Robinson's been able to do here as far as the situation that he found himself in, I think it's been phenomenal. You know, they've been waiting on some other guys to, you know, to kind of come along and step up a little bit, but he's been put in isolation, and the lack of a tight end threat over the last season or two has really added to the complexity of, you know, driving up numbers for Allen Robinson, because he's the guy. You know, at least Miller, if he can stay healthy, will be a nice number two, and if they can get the tight end situation squared away and get somebody productive on that side, and then the other thing is you have to have somebody coming out of the backfield catching the ball as well. Because if Allen Robinson's the only go-to guy, mm-hmm. then you've got a problem.
Dan, I just wanted to catch up with you and get your thoughts because we're supposed to have a season here, and the storylines are the same, but it's just different with this COVID-19, man. I just don't know how this works. I hope players got to come to the forefront
tough.
And talk
really
about
is.
This.
And you know, and time's working against starting training camp mm-hmm. On time just because of the situation. And, you know, look, I think each and every one of us has to take a certain amount of responsibility in whether or not we can knock this thing down. The one thing that you hear all of the medical experts say to you is the least you can do, which would be a great help, is wear a mask when you go out in public. And for whatever reason, you know, we've gotten so spoiled with everything. You know, everything's been so, you know, all good that we refuse to do the small things that can make a big difference in getting kids back in school, which is what I'm really concerned about, is getting kids back in school on time and whether or not that's a possibility because of what's going on in all these locations around the country. And then, you know, things like, you know, yeah, it would be great to get sports back and get everybody in, watching, and maybe every now and then if you get, you know, things work out right, you get some people back in the seats in the stadium. But look, you know, it's all of our responsibility to do what we can do to be, you know, of a positive influence in this thing.
As always, Dan, I appreciate your time. I got to talk about the Redskins now in our next segment.
Who?
The old Redskins.
Oh, there you go. Well, and God bless them. They got the right guy to handle that situation in Ron Rivera.
Yes. Yeah.
That's perfect. You know, Ron is one of those guys that can figure out how to you know, address this thing and get, you know, the whole conversation back on what's going on the field. But it was an important move, I think, that they made to get rid of that name.
I had Doc Walker on last week. He's taking jabs at you, Dan. I tell him, I said, be careful.
I still owe him about maybe $30. Did he tell you the story about why I owe him $30?
No, why do you owe him $30? He's still bitter, by the way. He's about that $30.
Well, we were down there. We were heading through Muscle Shoals, Alabama, going down to do a division, Division III championship game at North Alabama. And he was driving. He got stopped by Boss Hogg. And Boss Hogg gave him a speeding ticket. The guy gets out. He has the mirrored sunglasses on, the big hat and everything. Mm-hmm. And I told Doc, I said, show him your Super Bowl ring. You know, so he flashes his Super Bowl ring. It didn't make any difference to Boss Hogg. He still tapped him for $65.
He's still mad about it.
I thought I'd split it with him.
He wants to.
Doc, I give him another dollar.
He still wants his money, Dan. He
I know
still
that's wants right. His... Doc is tight.
I appreciate it, my friend. Right, thanks so much.
All right, take care, man.
It is Dan Jiggins, former Bear, with us here. Coming up, we will talk about the Washington football team. Oh, some big news out of the Washington newspapers. It's not pretty. We talk about it next right here on UTH.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
We've got Tales from the Hood coming up at 8:35 right here on ESPN 1000. Also, we're going to hear from Sal Palantonio in our next half hour as well about some of the storylines around the NFL. Eric, I know you're watching this White Sox intra-squad game like I am while we do the show. Let me tell you something. Big Cat, Rodon is really pissed off right now.
He's gotten taken deep twice by Encarnacion, once by Anderson in the last two innings. Not happy.
I don't know. Like, I feel like it's cool that we're watching this, but I also feel like, are we supposed to be watching this? Because there's some hurt feelings right now. Rodon is not happy right now. He's not happy because he's being squeezed by this. I don't know what the umpire is. I don't know who that guy is. But he's not happy he's getting squeezed, and he's also not happy that he's been taken deep a couple times here. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's supposed to be a dust-up, like I'm getting back, getting used to things, and thing is, it's on TV, and people are watching because there's nothing else. I will say the previous inning, Dylan Cease had a ridiculous curveball to end the inning.
Bugs Bunny curveball, I saw that. I wanted to say something about it, but we're interviewing Dan Jiggett, so I could do it at the same time. It's crazy, man. So we've been waiting for this story. As part of our summer football, we will continue here with this story regarding the Washington football team. It doesn't have a nickname just as of yet. So this came across from ESPN, and it's also part of a larger piece in the Washington Post, which we'll get a chance to really peruse and review later on. But Washington's NFL team has decided D.C. attorney Beth Wilkinson of the Wilkinson Wash LLP to review the organization's protocols, including its culture, policies, and allegations of workplace misconduct. Wilkinson has represented the NFL in a lawsuit challenging the league's Sunday ticket package and also successfully represented the NCAA and Major League Baseball in class action lawsuits. So here's a story from the Washington Post. And we heard about this a night ago or two nights ago. There was going to be some bombshell, and here it is. The move was made while speculation swirled around an upcoming story by the Washington Post, which was published late today. The story involves allegations of 15 former employees, all women, of sexual harassment by former scouts and members of Dan Snyder's inner circle. Now, here's what we know. That the allegations are not against Dan Snyder, the owner for the Washington team, or the general manager of the team. But we do know within the past week, front office members like Richard Mann III, Alex Santos, as well as play-by-play man Larry Michael, they left the organization. Now, I saw that on Twitter, that Larry Michael, and I've heard that name for 20 years, working with Westwood One and the voice of the Redskins, the former Redskins. I saw that on Twitter, that he resigned. I'm like, oh, that's odd. It's July. Why is he leaving a play-by-play gig with Washington? Well, they all three were accused of misconduct in the Washington Post story. It's all been reported that three minority shareholders are seeking to sell their interest in the team as well. The minority shareholders have hired the investment bank Moig and Company to vet buyers. So some of the minority shareholders also want out of this. It's a mess. It's a mess. And it all stems from Dan Snyder. It starts with him not wanting to change the name. And then you have this issue. 15 former employees of the former Redskins team, Washington's football team, all women, of sexual harassment, all talking about this, from former scouts and members of Dan Snyder's inner circle. That is just a mess. If you're Ron Rivera, the head coach for Washington's team, you have to be thinking to yourself, like, what did I get myself into? Now, it's one thing that Ron is next to Snyder in trying to retire the old Redskins logo and name, and they want to do something else, have a new name. But also on top of that, Eric, can you tell me earlier, I saw this story earlier about this one guy that has all of the names that the Washington football team would want. This guy, as a hobby, this came from John Keim from ESPN.com, a guy who covers Washington. It started as a joke, but this guy, 6 years later, has turned in a trademark, a collection into a hobby. This is crazy. This guy, is it McCauley? Martin McCauley has filed for 44 different trademark applications of names Washington could use. His latest filing was July 8th. The Washington Red Wolves, well, that'd be awful, joins a list of the Red Tails, the Monuments, the Washington Veterans, the Red-Tailed Hawks, the Washington Americans, the Washington Braves, Washington Redskins, Washington Renegades. There's also the Freedom Fighters and the Radskins.
The Radskins. Guy has to hate, like, Dan Snyder or the Washington football. Like, he's got to have some sort of vitriol to, like, apply for all these, knowing that these were the ones that were being floated around. And he applied for them, like you said, this month. So I don't know what he's trying to do and why he's blocking it, but he's holding up the whole process on them coming up with a new mascot.
He also owns Washington Pigskins.
I heard that one floated around, too. Yeah. So all the names you heard rumored, this guy decided to apply trademarks for.
It costs $275 apiece, by the way, the application to do this. He's a 61-year-old actuary who's also written books on real estate. He lives in Alexandria, Virginia. He's a fan of the Washington team, but he says that the money he saves from not attending games, he spent on trademarks.
Like, what? I don't get that at all.
It's sticking it to the organization. I hate my team so much. I know you're going to change the name one day, so I'm going to take up all the names that you're thinking of. And so now, instead of me paying for season tickets to go to Landover, Maryland to see these games, I'm going to put it on, you know, on these trademarks. $275 apiece.
So it's That's kind of the better version of raising money for a billboard. Like, you're just completely pulling the rug out from underneath these guys.
$275. Times 44, $1,200, $12,100, $12,100.
I mean, the money's going to burn a hole in your pocket if you don't spend it, so as well buy 44 trademarks.
I mean, bro, he's 61, he's an actuary, and he enjoys applying for trademarks as a hobby, not collecting stamps. Or
a nice like rock collection.
Seashells at the seashore. Yeah. No, he just wants to stick it to Daniel Snyder. And you know, Snyder's coming to him hat in hand and like, can I get, you know, looking at the, can I get Red Wolves? Can I get, you know, I don't think the Braves would work, actually.
No, that one, yeah, I'm surprised he even wasted his money on that.
But just
change
in case,
it
though,
from Redskins to Braves and call it a win. Like, that's what their change would.
I wonder, does he own Washington Football Club?
Ooh, I FC?
I want to say that I think that has also been taken.
That's interesting. I really have no idea. That's such a weird thing to collect to stick it to someone. But, hey, Daniel Snyder deserves everything stuck to him.
In many cases, the fans who submitted for trademarks let the application die because they had no intent on doing anything commercially with the name. But McCauley, he took it one step further, buying 100 pigskin coffee mugs and putting them up for sale online to meet a requirement that helped get the name registered. He said that the NFL's trademark attorney sent him a letter saying that they would allow the name.
Like, unbelievable. So he's spending money, like even more money, to make sure that Washington doesn't get their mascots.
This is,
I want to know his motivation behind it, really.
We haven't done Petty Junction for a while because we dropped some of our bits during COVID-19, but he is King Petty. He has to be in the team photo of the pettiest man in the world right now.
That's
unbelievable.
Absolutely one of the biggest petty things.
All right, coming up. There he is. He is running in the front of the petty train, without question, this guy.
Right, like he's conducting Russell Westbrook's train. Like, he's driving it.
I can't believe this, man. $12,100 of different trademark names just to stick it to Dan Snyder. Wow.
Fantastic.
All right.
Yep.
So, coming up next, we got something for Tales from the Hood that you're going to love. It concerns Jim Boylan. We want to ask you, where is Jim Boylan? And we will explain that next right here on UTH.
ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Tales from the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go.
Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. We're going to hear from Sal Palantonio in our next segment and getting his thoughts on some of the storylines around the NFL. All right, Eric. So a very special Tales from the Hood, as always, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. So we were going to talk about the Bulls, but I can't talk about the Bulls because I can't get past what we're going to hear right now. So Jim Boylan, the head coach of the Bulls, was talking about Arturas Karnišovas and Mark Eversley. And even though he's talking about this, there's something in the background that I just can't get over.
Well, I've got a new vice president, a new general manager. The relationship has gone really well. We communicate every day. I think they understand where we were, what we're trying to get to. They've been very supportive and collaborative. You know, it's a process to build this team into what it can be. I just like the fact that we have a relationship already. You know, it's never perfect, Jack. You know, nothing's perfect, right? And you just work at it and you tell the truth and you get your guys to play hard, and that's what we're trying to do.
Wait a minute. I don't know what he said because I'm listening to Young MC Bust a Move. What is that?
I heard like three words, and then all of a sudden I'm just completely listening. And then we get the whoever the announcer.
And now coming back to the stage.
What in the world, man? Like, I don't know what he was talking about because I was just so keyed in on why is Boylan talking and Bust a Move with Young MC, lame ass Young MC in the background. Now here's the thing, like. I'm trying to figure out where he was. You don't have a location, right? You don't know where you got that sound, where he was. I have no idea.
No, I do not have a tag to it.
Okay, there's no tag. So we have to determine where was Boylan where Young MC from 88 is playing in the background. And he's not in, like, the bubble. The Bulls are not part of this 22 teams in the bubble in the NBA. So, okay. So my first inclination, when you hear Bust a Move and a mic, a guy on the mic, coming to the stage. I'm thinking strip club.
Right. It's some low-grade strip club with Bust a Move on. So, like, that's what it sounded like. That's an option.
Okay, what do you have? What do you think Boylan was? Because that wasn't around basketball. That was someplace. Where do you think Boylan was where in the city, ladies look pretty, guys tell jokes that can't seem witty. Tell a funny joke to get some play, then try to make a move, then she says no way. What do you think that was?
Boy, so many options. I think he might have been at your local TGI Fridays doing the 80s music trivia night. So I think he was at his music trivia.
The blank was there. Like, what in the... What? Like, out of all things, like, as we were talking about this before, yes, there are some NBA cities, including the United Center, that will play lame music, right? During the timeouts, you know, like, between... but... I don't know where he was, where that was. So I like TGI Fridays, strip club. I'm going barbecue in Deerfield.
Yes, a very white barbecue at that, too, by the way. Yes.
I'm going paid DJ that's supposed to be the hottest thing out there, and they're going, okay, you know what, I got my playlist, I'm ready to go. Some clown with a gold chain is just like, your best friend Harry has a brother Larry, in 5 days he's not gonna marry. That's what I want. That's what I think. I'm thinking a barbecue in Deerfield where dude is bringing Bust a Move as far as his playlist.
Like a really bad bar mitzvah in Deerfield?
I can see it.
He could be at a local roller rink. The cosmic, the lights go in, and then they announce, and now couple skate, everybody. Put your right foot in, all of a sudden in the roller rink.
I like that. All right. Roller rink, yes. All right, I'll write it down. Roller rink. Where was Jim Boylan? I'm going to say Young MC found himself a gig at a lame casino where he was the headliner, where he was the number one person on the card. And people came to Smallville, Missouri to see Young MC, no fine girls, just ugly faces, from Frustration First Inclination. So bad.
It's one of those casinos where they don't have the digital slots yet. It's still just the pole slots and ashtrays as far as you can see.
She's dressed in yellow. She says, hello. Come sit next to me, you fine fellow. He run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, Bust a Move.
Gosh,
there you go.
It sounds so like bad. Anything. Like, he could be at like a 7-year-old's birthday party playing just jock jams. Like, I don't even know where he is, but it's unbelievable.
Please give me one more spin of where is Jim Boylan, where that is playing in the background.
Well, I've got a new vice president, a new general manager. The relationship has gone really well. We communicate every day. I think they understand where we were, what we're trying to get to. They've been very supportive and collaborative. You know, it's a process to build this team into what it can be. I just like the fact that we have a relationship already. You know, it's never perfect, Jack. You know, nothing's perfect, right? And you just work at it and you tell the truth and you get your guys to play hard, and that's what we're trying to do.
And my last choice, the United Center. That's where he was.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The home of bad music during Bulls games. And that, my friends, is Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000. Where do you think Boylan was where Young MC Busta Move was out there? At ESPN 1000 on Twitter. Sal Pal next on UTH.
This is Under the Hood on ESPN 1000. Follow at @TweetJHood on Twitter.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Don't forget the baseball show presented by Goose Island Beer Company comes your way tomorrow at 6 after Waddle and Sylvie right here on ESPN 1000. Jeff Dickerson and I got a chance to talk to Sal Palantonio about some of the storylines around the NFL. Here's our conversation with the NFL insider for ESPN.
It was an eventful and complicated week, Jonathan, for Eagles wide receiver DeSean Jackson, who apologized for a series of anti-Semitic Instagram posts over last weekend. Jackson has tried to, it certainly seems like, make amends and learn from his mistakes, but he absolutely is still embroiled in some controversy in Philadelphia. And no one knows the Eagles better than our guy, ESPN's Sal Palantonio, who joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Sal Pal, hope you're doing well, my friend, during these uncertain times. You know, this is DeSean Jackson's second stint in Philadelphia. I'm sure you know him pretty well. Was he ever someone that, up until this point, was known to say anything or post anything offensive that people found out about over the years?
No, not to my knowledge. He's a very popular player within the team and in this city, for sure. We're very well-liked, very charitable, does a lot in the community. And well-liked in the locker room. You know, that's the reason why general manager Howie Roseman brought him back from Washington at such a late stage in his career. They thought that he had plenty left as a player. But more important, you know, he is really somebody that's beloved in Philadelphia.
So, Sal, because of this, there's a big spotlight on him now because of the comments that were made and others against him, some that are backing him. What does that say for his future in Philadelphia?
Well, you know, it's pretty clear from a statement from the Philadelphia Eagles and from DeSean Jackson that he has accepted his punishment. They've come to a meeting of the minds about what transpired. And he's obviously apologized to the ownership and to the team. And now going forward, he has to do the right thing. The Eagles expect him to be much more learned about Jewish culture and Jewish history, get out into the community, speak to Jewish leaders, perhaps go to the Holocaust Museum with Julian Edelman. He already spoke with a Holocaust survivor yesterday. Via Zoom. So, you know, he's got to do and say the right things. You know, it's important to know the dynamics here. Not only is DeSean Jackson, you know, a well-liked member of the team and the community, but this doesn't really happen unless Jeffrey Lurie is the owner. You know, Jeffrey has shown that he is a really good-hearted a guy with a good soul who believes in second chances. All you got to do is ask Michael Vick and Riley Cooper, who, of course, was caught on camera using a racial slur 7 years ago. Cooper was sent home for 4 days for sensitivity training, but he wasn't suspended, and he was signed to an extension later by the team. So, you know, Lurie and Roseman are both very forgiving men. They want to make sure that, however, that DeSean Jackson, going forward, says the right things, but also does the right things and owns up to the mistake that he made.
It's a great point you make, Sal, about Riley Cooper, talking with Sal Palantonio. I don't seem to remember much after the initial fallout from Riley Cooper. I mean, that pretty much, you said, he signed an extension, and that pretty much went away, didn't it?
Well, I don't know whether it went away in the minds of a lot of the players, African-American players, for sure. It's hard to know. None of them really spoke publicly about it. You know, Chip Kelly was the head coach of the team, and as soon as Doug Peterson became coach of the team, Riley Cooper was no longer on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I'm not going to engage in any kind of moral equivalency about either these two incidences, but I think it just speaks mainly to the forgiving nature of this owner. And he wants to make sure he has a measured response to things. He's not going to act, you know, from the hip. He's not going to act irrationally. He's a very thoughtful guy. He had a very long conversation with DeSean Jackson on Tuesday for an hour in the late afternoon. And I was told that he was obviously very upset by what Jackson posted. Lurie, of course, is Jewish and is very close to the Jewish community in Philadelphia. You know, they had a really tough, honest conversation. Jackson, I'm told, was contrite. He was humble. He was extremely apologetic. And so they're all trying to move forward from this. That's where they are. You know, Jackson's got a lot to prove, not only in off the field, but on the field this year. He's 33 years old. He missed most of last year due to an injury. They want him to be a productive member of this football team going forward, both as a person and as a player.
Sal, jumping in our conversation that Jeff and I had earlier regarding college football, we were talking about reading that the Big Ten, Pac-12, they've decided to just go to just conference play and get rid of the non-conference part of the schedule just to be in the area of their conference. Is there any word that you've heard or any contingency plans from the NFL as far as their scheduling for the regular season while COVID-19 is happening?
Well, you know, this is a very active negotiation going on between the NFL Players Association and the NFL. There are a number of issues that they are still discussing before training camps even open up regarding protocol. Daily testing versus testing that happens on maybe an every 3-day period. The players want an acclimation period that would phase in players physically because there wasn't much of an off-season program. The players, according to some reports, don't want any preseason. The NFL wants 2 preseason games. You know, the NFL makes a lot of money off preseason because they don't have to pay players game checks. That's a windfall of cash for them, and they don't want to give up those all 4 preseason games. They may have to, however. There's some other issues about that economics that are unresolved. The NFL wants a certain amount of the player salaries put into escrow, and you've seen some of the comments that players have made that said, "Hey, listen, I'm going to be on the front lines here. I should be getting a pay raise, not a cut in pay." So we're talking like in 2 weekends, players are going to start showing up to their facilities to get ready for the start of training camp, and they've got a lot of unresolved issues.
I mean, normally, Sal, we have that schedule already a month ago. We know the practices. We know everything, the preseason game. I mean, and now we're walking into this thing almost blind. And I know that this is a very fluid subject, and we live in a time of complete uncertainty. But just based on the people you talk to around the NFL, are you still optimistic that football will be played sort of as normal this fall in the NFL?
You know, I'm never in the prediction business. I don't want to say optimistic or not optimistic. I think there are unresolved issues, but there are really smart people involved in the negotiations from both sides. DeMar Smith is a very smart advocate for his players. Troy Vincent, former player, former Philadelphia Eagle, know him very well, grew up right near where I live, and others at the NFL are, you know, understand what has to be done to make the players whole in a situation like this. And I think everybody involved wants to see it happen and try to make it happen. The last thing they want to do is be the one league that doesn't give it a good try. You see baseball trying. Obviously, basketball's gone through a heck of a lot to try to create these bubbles. This bubble down in Orlando just to get some games started. NHL, all of them, soccer. So I think they're going to get the issues resolved. I think what you're going to see with a very high level of certainty is that players will arrive at their facilities. Testing will begin. They will begin to have meetings, workouts, and then, of course, comes practice.